Shout Out is a registered charity and we work all across Ireland delivering workshops to young people. We deliver workshops in schools, to teachers, to parents and guardians, youth workers and even workplaces, because eventually you'll end up working there too, and we want those to be inclusive spaces for you.
For 10 years now, since 2012, we've been delivering workshops in secondary schools across the island of Ireland to tackle LGBTQ plus bullying. And we've done over 2,000 student workshops over the past 8 school years, speaking directly to over 60,000 students.
In Shout Out, we use our on-the-ground experience of speaking with young people to inform all of our training modules, which we also deliver to teachers, parents, guardians, social workers, youth workers, and in workplaces.
If you believe in inclusion through education and you want to learn more, book a workshop for your school or for staff, and you can learn more at www.shoutout.ie.
Hi, you're listening to Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
Tartu Geish Dukla, Shout Out, Listen In.
Shout Out, Listen In.
In both our workshops and on this podcast, members of the LGBTQ plus community share their own personal stories, which can lead to open conversations about both the positive and the negative experiences of being LGBTQ plus. We are aware that these stories can be triggering for people at times, so please be gentle and cautious when listening, and always reach out for help if you feel you need it.
My name is Lisa Nekumbrav from the Shout Out Steering Committee, and I'll be hosting today's episode. In today's episode of Shout Out Listen In, we'll be chatting to Sheena Cahill and Sarah Lane McHugh, who were married just a few months ago, and they'll be talking to us about their wonderful gay marriage, all of the excitement around it, but also about looking back to the marriage equality referendum of 2015, the campaigning they did for marriage equality at the time, and how they reflect back on that campaigning work, on their childhoods growing up in rural Ireland, and much, much more. It was such a pleasure to sit down with both of them, and thanks to them for sharing so much of themselves in this episode. Do, as always, take caution in listening to this episode. We speak a bit about the difficulties in coming out and the challenges that LGBT people have faced over the years and still face in society. So, as always, take breaks as needed from today's episode. But for now, we'll jump right in and hear more from Sheena Cahill and Sarah Lane McHugh about their new lives as a gay married couple, their recent wedding, remembering the 2015 referendum, libraries and the policing of LGBTQ books in Ireland and around the world, and much, much more. I hope you enjoy today's episode. So I'm here in the kitchen of lovely Sheena Cahill and Sarah Lane McHugh, unless you've changed names and I'm not aware.
No, we haven't actually.
Not yet.
That's an interesting question, I think, for LGBT couples when we talk about marriage, because sometimes there's an expectation that we will change names. And I mean, I always said if I had settled down with a guy that I wouldn't have changed names anyway. So I guess it just comes down, whether you're a queer couple or a straight couple, it comes down to what you believe in.
I agree. I think it's kind of... You're already challenging what people expect from a marriage anyway, just by being in a same-sex relationship or getting married as we are to a woman. But yeah, for me, it was kind of like a feminist principle. This is like before I even knew I was gay.
Yeah.
That I would never take the man's name, and like the patriarchy was coming to steal, you know, my identity. So we haven't done it yet. But I think it's probably partly because for us, it's obviously not the patriarchy, though we have gotten married. So, you know,
we're part of
the structural inequality. But it's more just that for both of us, I think, you know, we love who we are and the names that we've grown up with and what that means for other people and for ourselves. And I think that's kind of a nice thing. So
I still think McCahill would work.
Oh, combining.
Yeah, McCahill. So keep that on the burner for me, darling, will you?
No, I agree. I'm quite wedded, for want of a better pun, to my last name as well. So I have no real desire to, and I don't think we should have, in this day and age, I don't think we should have to. Do you know, unless
join PPS
really
numbers, etc.
Yeah, do you know, quit my job now, I'm a married woman, all that jazz.
And it's not that long ago. it's not that long ago that people had to do that.
This is it.
Well, you know,
I had to remind someone at work, because I'm a librarian, so I'm working for the public sector, that if this was 40 years ago, I would have to have quit because there was a ban on married women working in the public sector. Once you got married, you're out the door.
Mm-hmm. But also, you wouldn't have married
Shane. And that's, that's it.
And this
is. Once I got married in my closeted or lavender marriage, I'd be out the door.
Yeah. And I'll be getting married soon, too, to a woman. And we've really been thinking lately about how. Thank you. We've been thinking, and it feels more profound to us now than I think it even did in 2015 and since, because we're actually getting married and there's a practical reality to it. It's like, wow, it's really profound to think that 10 years ago we wouldn't have been able to, none of the four of us would have been able to get married.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, and how do you kind of reflect on 2015 and the campaigns that led up to it, when you think about your own marriage and your own lives now and the importance of marriage to you?
I'm shocked at myself because I had a gay agenda all along. That's the first thing. It's weird because, first of all, it doesn't feel so long ago. In ways, you know, the scars that were left by that, being involved in that campaign or being impacted by that campaign, whether you were involved in it or not, I think they're still very much with us in lots of ways. And just the idea that, you know, so many of us had to go out and, you know, effectively beg people, you know, door to door, to allow us the right to marry. I mean, standing there, you know, we got married down in Cork, and we stood at the top of the room of all kind of like our friends and family, and it was not lost on us how lucky we were. And I hate to say the word lucky in the context of the legality of marriage and the right to get married, because that should never have been in question. But, you know, I did feel lucky, and it wasn't lost on us how many people had and are maybe not with us anymore, who didn't get a chance to see it or didn't get a chance in their own lives, who may be older now or whatever has happened for them in their lives, and just that's not going to be an option. And, you know, we're one of the you know, we're the starter couples, you know. I know we're getting married a few years later, but there's, you know, the numbers are small because the community is small. We make a big noise. But I think every single couple that goes out there and is able to talk about, you know, who they're in love with and is able to get married if they'd like to, I think is kind of standing up for other couples and other people in the LGBT community. And I think that was with us on the day, wasn't it?
Oh, it definitely was. And I mean, I still, like, I've lived in Dublin for 15 years now, nearly, and in Galway before that. And I've always kept my vote in Longford. And I mean, my little hometown that I won't name for legal reasons, but my little hometown voted no for marriage equality. Do you know? And it's kind of, you know, that's not, you don't forget that either.
No.
It's like a nice
people little, remember the counties. I'm mixing up with the 2018 referendum now, but it did stand out to people.
I was at my home box when it voted no. And you know, I'm from a little, very small community in South Longford, and you know, everybody goes down to vote in the local school for all the referenda, for all the types of elections, local, European, national, all that. And you walk in and, you know the person, you know, behind the desk. They know your name, they know your family, they watch you grow up because they're in the local school. And, you know, later that day in 2015 and the day after, I stood where that ballot box was being opened, and if people around me had voted no, just, you know, and that was an awful, it was an awful condemnation. I mean, and, you know, I think we unfairly target poor old Leitrim for the no vote there. But actually, a lot of communities and smaller polling stations around Ireland didn't vote yes. And I think,
and you remember your village, your town, your constituency.
Because like that, they're people you grew up with. The people who know you know them going in the door, and you're just going, guys, give me something here.
And at the end of the day, 2015 wasn't just about marriage. And I'm sure you may be like myself and Mo, where marriage at the end of the day doesn't make a difference to our relationship. We will stay together forever, and that's the most important thing. But the point was acceptance, and it really was a pivotal moment for us to all sit down and say, well, how do we feel about queer people in our society? So it wasn't just about marriage, and therefore for ye it wasn't about the practicality of marriage. It was about how people viewed you, and did people see you as equal citizens, I suppose.
Yeah, and like, it was, I think we talked about rights a lot in that referendum, on a human level, human rights level. And we did that for a reason. It was, I suppose, to put this in context. It was about legal, the legal ramifications, but beyond the legal ramifications of being in a civil partnership or a marriage or otherwise, it was about how acceptance, and about the sense that how people, treated you in life, would be different some way because you weren't in a heterosexual relationship. And that was entirely and completely unfair. It was degrading, and it meant that so many people were so unhappy in their lives. So yeah, it was a milestone for sure. It was about visibility. It was about opening up the conversations, and it was about marriage, but really, yes, you're absolutely right. It was about so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are wounds from that conversation, as I said. But the other side of it, of course, is that so many of us are in the very, very happy position to have been able to publicly declare our lives with another person by way of marriage. And not everyone wants that. Absolutely. If you had asked me this like a few years ago, I'd been like, absolutely out with you. Marriage
no
is
interest.
Just, no, like not at all. Are you joking? First of all, it just wasn't in the radar. Just had never been. And I think potentially as well, when you're coming out as a young person and, you know, the norm for people who are like you. Mm. So people who might be in the LGBT community. If the norm isn't that they can look ahead at people who are married, then you're not going to do that either. And it's not because you're blind. It's not because you can't see or you can't envision it. But it is harder to do that. So marriage was then never on the cards.
You can't see it. You can't.
Yeah, whole, not at all.
Can't see it, can't be it. Like, there's a beautiful, if any other queer women are listening and would like to see, or any queer people, there's a beautiful Australian magazine, and they do it in print, called Dancing With Her. And it's beautiful pictures of female and non-binary people getting married. And I remember the first time I saw that magazine, I thought, wow, I could get married, you know, and I'm bisexual. Yeah. But I remember thinking, I can see that. I can see that wedding. So it's really interesting. It really is what you can see. And I suppose I have to, we have to do a deep dive into the lovely positives, because I think we forget sometimes as well that Ireland has changed drastically even since 2015. And the conversations that were had at that time, I feel like a lot of them would not be accepted now, even what we talked about. So let's talk about the beautiful positivity that we have now in 2024 or 2023 when you got married. Talk to us about your wedding day and how it was to get married.
Oh, well, not at me there. it was great. I was someone who did not think I was getting married, really. Didn't feature in the plan, but just was not something I ever had really considered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we decided to do it, when she and I was brave enough to finally ask me to
excuse
marry,
me,
you know,
pop the question,
absolutely not.
Question. I
dropped enough.
For
I dropped enough hints at that stage.
It was a leap year, was it? Was it a leap year?
Oh my gosh!
Actually, was it a leap year?
No, was it? I don't know. No, actually,
this is a leap year.
It was post COVID, so it was our first trip away.
Mm-hmm.
It was first trip away after COVID, and that's when we sit down to Clonakilty, and we love going there. It's just fab.
Some may say as far away from Longford as you can get while on the island of Ireland.
I wouldn't say that, you know, at all. But we had a beautiful day. Like, we decided we got engaged there and we were going to get married down there. And I think, you know, both families were like, these, you know, two ones from Longford, what are they dragging us all down? And said, like, as far as you can, by way as you can possibly go. But it was part of our story from the beginning. So we wanted to mark that there. And it was beautiful. I mean, you know, like all weddings go, you have an idea of, you know, how many people you're going to have and what it's going to look like. And then that expands or contracts, whatever way you do it.
Usually
it expands. Definitely
expands.
But I think it was so important, actually, to have all the people there that came. like we had 200 people at our wedding, and we would not, I wouldn't have thought that we would have had that many people. Every single person that came had a great time, but were there to support us so much. Like, I mean, and people that, you know, I think we could probably say, like, that wouldn't necessarily be the most open-minded people in the world, but they're family, so they come, do you know? Who were up dancing with drag queens. Like, who legit just were, like, really kind of got it, I think. Or
and this I remember from your wedding. You had rainbow flags, you had drag queens. It was a real queer wedding.
That's it. Yeah. And it was really, and that was exactly what I was going to hit on, is that it was massively important to us that we had a gay wedding. Like, it was a queer wedding. The guy identifies as a queer woman, and it was really important for me to be like, this is a queer wedding, and for Sheehan as well. And we didn't, said we had drag queens and we had flags, and we incorporated all the things that we love. Like, I didn't have any bridesmaids, I had all bridesmen. I wore a suit.
And we had mixed bridal parties.
And we mixed bridal parties, and we didn't tone down any part of the things that we love or that for anyone. And I think we were lucky probably that, you know, you'll always get, I think regardless of straight wedding, gay wedding, whatever it is, you know, you'll always have a certain amount of input, for want of a better word, from the family, from the parents, from whoever it is. But nothing, you know, at the end of the day, nobody had anything but love for everything that happened on the day and the lead up to it.
And it was a decision, you know. Weddings are actually a series of horrible decisions that have financial consequences. The decision to have a wedding that was very much openly embracing, I suppose, the fact that we're part of an LGBT or queer community, was one that we made very early on, and it came under pressure. I mean, ultimately, it's easier said than done to say, I'm having a big gay wedding, until, because then, you know, Sarah mentioned the input from family and others. I mean, the reality is that there is a huge amount of pressure on you, from all the people who love you, the people who are in your life, who care about you. But everybody, absolutely, everybody comes to weddings with a certain expectation as to what normally happens at a wedding. And, you know, not only are you, I suppose, a same-sex couple in our scenario, but, you know, you're going maybe with a humanist celebrant, so it's not in a church, so already that's slightly different. And then, you know, leaning then into the things that we love, but also that idea of kind of really showcasing our queer community and identities. And we bought like a load of Progress Pride flags and we gave them out to everyone. But as part of the speeches, you know, we talked about, we stood up together actually for the speeches. And that's something that I'd recommend to anyone. Honestly, I don't understand why we don't do that. But at the end, both of us stood up to kind of share out the bit of thank yous and those kind of things. But I suppose I took the opportunity when I had the chance with all of these kind of uncles and aunts and neighbors and everything in the room. And yes, we had uncles, aunts and neighbors because my parents couldn't be stopped. To remind them that that they had come and they had had a really, really good day. It was brilliant. It was wonderful. We had friends and family up during the ceremony, kind of saying a few words, reading kind of abstracts from our favourite kind of TV shows like Schitt's Creek and Buffy the Vampire Slayer as part of the ceremony. But I was like, you can't leave here and not take this with you. The next time you were in a space where someone says something that is homophobic or is kind of transphobic or makes little of a minority group, we expect you to take this experience with you and step in or say something because it's hardest when it's your family and friends. So I think we look back and it was a very, very gay day. And that in itself was just so awesome because for us, you said it, Lisa, which is that the marriage was one thing. I mean, it's a piece of paper that we fought really hard to get. And I don't think we should forget that in ways. But what it was celebrating each other in front of our friends and family. So there were probably things we did as well that were more traditional than we might necessarily have set out to do because we wanted to kind of really ensure that everyone in the room saw this as a wedding, saw it as...
Interesting.
Yeah, saw it as that. And also for our parents, that they got the opportunity to do the walking down the aisle and all. And we loved that. Like, yeah. One of my favorite parts of the day, that neither of us witnessed, was both of our mothers came and met each other at the bottom of the aisle and walked up together.
Mm.
And oftentimes the, you know, because people can do it any way you want, you say, but actually there's a lot of politics in trying to give everyone a job.
Yeah, never mind like adding in LGBTQ plus politics. Yeah. Family politics is just like it's a lot.
That takes over.
Yeah, it was like, and I think there was a sense as well of, you know, we said like, it was people coming into our space.
Mm. Yeah.
Like we're like, this is a gay wedding. Mm. This is a queer wedding. Mm. This is a space for our community and for us to celebrate. And we want, obviously, family and friends who aren't in that community, but you're coming into our space and we're not going to tone anything down for you. I mean, we didn't even tell anyone that we didn't actually tell anyone we drag. Surprise drag.
Yeah.
Except for a couple of people. And, like, it was amazing. But, like, there's also that trepidation, a little bit of, like, how are certain uncles going to react?
On the risk assessment, like it was high up there, yeah, I'm going to be honest about it. We were always going to have the drag queens. And we had the misses who you have had on this podcast.
Wonderful. Powerful podcasters themselves.
Yes.
That's it.
And we had them down and we didn't tell anybody. And part of the reason, I'll be honest, was because the rugby, Irish rugby match was on at the same time as the speeches.
Talk about straight meets.
we are going to have the Six Nations final during our speeches. So same.
We'll be prepared for a lot of phones on tables.
And you know what? Respect to that, because I'd probably do the same. But we didn't tell people, and in fairness, the way things ran, because nothing runs on time the way you think it does at an event like this. And I organise events for a living, so this was really hard. But ultimately, we didn't tell people because then no one genuinely had an opportunity to leave the room. And so the drag queens like burst in a cloud of ABBA. And if anyone had tried to get up, we would have known exactly who they were. And no one did. Like we had, you mentioned uncles, like we had drag queens sitting on uncles' laps. We had like aunts, you know, on both sides, cousins and people, you know, again, neighbors and friends of our parents jumping up and singing along. With drag queens, we know that they had never really experienced drag culture before.
Mm.
And they probably had a lot of questions, which a lot of people do when they see drag for the first time. But they embraced it and they ran with it. And it was just like so much gay glory. It was incredible.
Cracking day.
Yeah, cracking. Cracking. It was great, yeah. Apart from the weather, which was stormy and crappy and terrible. But what did you say on the day about how rainy it was?
Rainbows.
It was when you tie a knot, if you tie a knot and it gets wet, it's a lot harder to untie the knot. That was my little line.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. I will take
that one.
Get
that one for free.
Yeah. And, you know, like I think like as someone, my friends brought me to 366, surprisingly, for my hen party. And that was really special too. Yeah. Like for straight friends to bring me into that space, I found that really profound. I think really you have a lot of profound moments where I think it can take you back, wedding planning and hen parties and all the like, can take you back to coming out and your first experiences of being queer and imagining that you would be here. Like, how do you think about that if it's not too emotive to think back to, you know, the young Sheena and Sarah Lane and what this would have meant? And as you say, although it wasn't something completely out of reach for our generation, we still never imagined it. We still never imagined marrying women. So how do you feel about that? Or what do you think?
Oh God,
your younger self.
You're going into a deep cut there. I know it's trite to say it, that you'd love to get the opportunity to talk to your kind of 15-year-old self in particular. I mean, I was finding life so difficult. And on the outside, I was extremely extroverted. And I was involved in debating and I couldn't be shut up. I was talking all the time. But it was all actually, a lot of it was me kind of hiding behind, I suppose, this kind of persona, this outwards person. And I found everything very difficult and I was probably in a very dark place and constantly at odds with mom and dad, which is not unusual when you're that age, for sure. No. That doesn't make it any easier.
No.
And even going into college, which I think a lot of queer people probably listening will identify with, which is that you go through like a teenage period again when you come out. And coming out for me was, you know, it's tricky. it's complicated. But even when I had come out and I'd kind of just trying to figure myself out, I guess, in that process, I can't imagine, I couldn't imagine that I'd meet anyone that genuinely I'd want to spend my life with. Because you'd be like, are you well? you know, you only want to spend your time with your best friends because they're the people who love you most and know warts and all what the crack is.
And your chosen family.
Yeah, the chosen people around you.
Different structures, maybe.
For sure. Yeah. But, you know, it's really hard. It was really, really hard at times to see a way out and a way up from that. And yeah, I couldn't have imagined it. So I just feel very lucky.
Because we can have all these layers as well as LGBT people and dealing with the coming out process, which, you know, has its own flaws.
Yeah.
And so maybe those confidence issues as well. Whatever we're thinking about weddings, you maybe don't even imagine that you could have a solid, happy relationship. So it's hard. And I'm conscious as well that there might be young people listening to us today who are maybe in that space now and maybe are listening to you too and thinking, wow, like, I didn't even think that women got married. Like, that,
I know.
We've had gay marriage for a number of years, but a lot of young people don't.
Yeah, that's it. And it's funny, I was the opposite of Sheena in a sense because I was the opposite of the extrovert. I just disappeared into myself when I was, and I had a lot of like body image issues and stuff when I was in secondary school. And like, I look back at pictures of myself and I'm like, I don't even recognize to an extent this person. And like, I was hunched over and just always wearing massively oversized, like just anything to hide myself, all in black, the usual kind of thing. And I didn't come out till I was 24. Like, I was out of college. So I did the straight girl thing in college. I lived with five other girls in a house. And God, when I think back, it was such a different experience. And like, when I think back to how miserable I was, like, I got on with the girls and everything, but you know, the weekends or the Thursday nights was like, it was in Galway at the time when they actually had a nightclub and it was like going to CPs and never feeling comfortable, never feeling like it was the space I was supposed to be in. And I really struggled through all of that. And then I came out and I came out of college and I was working for a year and I ended up doing a show, well, kind of a show in Galway, and all the friends, like all my bridesmen for the wedding, all the best friends that I've made, and that's going back 20 years now nearly, are the best friends I still have. And like,
come from that show time.
And come from that time, like, I met 2006. That's when I met. I remember the year. That's how much it's like stuck out for me. And I was like, remember walking into Strano, I think it's now Nova, Strano Bar in Galway.
Now
Nova. And it was like tiny and just walking.
It's still in. Tiny.
Still tiny. Still tiny. I was going to say.
It's still tiny.
That's where I had my hen party.
There's no fireman's hole in the middle anymore and it's the lesser forest. But walking in there and being like, oh my God, this is it. And I think I came out to my parents maybe a year later to that. And then it was like, this is it, this is my life, this is amazing.
And that holistic experience of being a queer person, I think, can be tricky, especially, you know, I'm bisexual, and I think then sometimes people think you're two different people, something like that. But I think that you talked about the friendships that you formed and how strong they were and how deep they can be, the spaces that you go into, whether it's a bar or it's outhouse or wherever, like, they're so crucially and fundamentally important. And I can't, it's very hard to even put words on it, but it's that kind of ingrained and internal feeling, isn't it?
Because before that, you're trying to find spaces. And even if you don't know, even when you're young, you're not really sure what you're looking for, but you're finding spaces that you're, you know, on your own nearly. I mean, it's probably more open now for younger people, which is amazing. But like, I remember going, like, I'm a librarian now, and I remember going to the library. And I remember, like, some of the books, like, you know, reading books that there wasn't enough. There's so much more now, I would say, for young people. But, like, even reading the adult books, anything. Like, Jeanette Winterson. Like, I remember the first time reading Orange is Not the Only Fruit. And being like, oh, my God, this is... Like,
a classic for any young people listening.
A classic for any young people. Librarian's Recommendation, a classic. And reading that for the first time, been like, oh, my God. And it was actually a friend that had recommended it. Like, I remember watching The X-Files.
and being like in love with Gillian Anderson, as every queer woman of a certain age and younger even now.
Yeah.
Having a poster of Gillian Anderson up in my room, but also having a poster of Fox Mulder in my room to balance it out, so it didn't look weird. So when you're younger, I think sometimes when you're on your own and you're finding these spaces, that you're kind of doing that journey on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe less so now. I would hope less so now, yeah, that it's more open and.
But it's so lonely for so long for so many people, and I think it doesn't matter how much the internet opens into our lives, of which it really. It's you know, only at arm's length away at any point now. But I think it's still really hard because you talked about the coming out process being in and of itself kind of complicated and flawed. To come out, you have to figure out yourself.
Mm.
You have to come into yourself, I guess, to figure out, you know, find that voice. That like is like, yes, I am, I do fancy Miss Honey, or like and putting a name to that is really, really hard. And I remember at a certain point in my own queer journey, I got really frustrated with the idea of being put in boxes, mm-hmm, as an example. Mm-hmm. And I think that will always be something that we talk about as a community, about the value of labels or not. And I think they can be very, very contentious. But they can also be very empowering, yeah, because
and important,
the way I would describe it as being my experience was that, you know, putting a box around, you know, and stepping into it and putting lesbian on that box and just being in it and just settling into it for a second, figuring out, am I comfortable here? How do I feel about how I'm looking at the world now? How do I feel about how the world might look at me?
Mm.
You know, am I prepared for that? What does that mean for me? All of those questions are going on for so long internally before you ever say it out loud. And, you know, I was 21 when I came out, and I was in the States at the time, and I was on study abroad. So, I mean, obviously at this stage, I'd had like one boyfriend when I was 15,
mm-hmm,
Nathan the drummer, good man, and we'd broken up after like 3 weeks, and he was like, sure, I'll see you on the bus, because we used to sit beside each other. And it was really cute. And I look back at like that being the easiest breakup anyone has ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And then nothing, wasn't with a single person, didn't kiss anyone, avoided all types of social situations, despite the fact that I was an extrovert. Until I was kind of, even when I was in college, you were talking about the Thursday nights, it was the roost in Maynooth for us. I went to Maynooth University, and I just avoided where I could. I got very, very involved in student societies, got very involved in student life, and I cared about all of those things, but just wasn't in a position to, I suppose, consider myself a romantic person. So for a long time, I didn't have the word asexual or aromantic or anything. None of those labels had occurred to me for a long time, but I certainly didn't feel like I was attracted to anyone actually for a long time. Kept it to myself and didn't really deal with it internally. And then
you met this lovely lady.
Well, oh Jesus, she
got beautiful.
You know, I went to the States, and I was around a different crowd. I had different friends, and I think when you're young, if you're a young person listening, you know, the people around you now are a certain set of people, and they can be incredible and amazing friends. But there are so many more people in the world to meet, and you're going to meet them in different spaces. And the best thing is when you meet people when you're not expecting it, and it's going to be accidental, or it's going to be in spaces and places where you find people who see the world the way you do. And as lonely as you might be right now in your head, there are other people who feel that way. And back in the day, people used to find those class, other people,
right?
On Tumblr.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
now you find them. Yeah, they can be in your class, and they could be in student societies. They could be at, you know, at the GA match you're going to, or the training you're going to, and you just maybe haven't chatted to them yet, and maybe they don't even know. And so those people are out there, and you're just yet to meet them.
We always look back at school, and I was in an all-girls school, and we say, you know, there were no queer women in school or girls in school.
That's what we thought.
But actually, when we look back now, we're like, wow, maybe 10%. So I'm telling
it's much
you,
higher percentage
again,
than
young people listening, it's probably higher again. And I want to give a shout out to my sister in case she's listening. When you mentioned the Roost, she campaigned with you in Maynooth around that time when you were inequality and everything. But also to my dad, who's a librarian like yourself, Eddie.
Oh,
and I want to come back to what you said about books, because I think, like, what can we, where do we begin when we talk about books? And, you know, growing up with a librarian in the house, policing books was never something that ever came up in all of those years. It probably came up before I was born, and, you know, we all know it came up for generations before. And as an Irish speaker, we had books that wouldn't ever have been published in English but were allowed in Irish. How do you feel as a librarian when you talk about the importance of books, like the books that you mentioned and the wonderful books that we see in libraries and bookshops now and in school libraries, I've seen on shout out workshops? How do you feel when then people are trying to take those books away?
Not good. I think the whole conversation is quite depressing. I think the misinformation that's out there about these books, and I mean, we've all heard people on the radio and, you know, talking to Joe Duffy and protesting you know, the harm that's being done, not just to the library system itself and this attempt to undermine. Like, we have a fantastic library system in this country, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a librarian, but in comparison to other countries as well, like, we have a brilliant system here, and it's a fair system. And I mean, every county has stock collection policies and things like that. Nothing is coming into libraries that is detrimental or dangerous,
damaging
to kids or to young people. Like, there is nothing. And people who choose then to take, you know, context or take words and take sentences and take books out of context, and, you know, they're doing damage, like, because it does. I know people now who would consider themselves very open-minded, and colleagues and people who don't work in libraries who would consider themselves open-minded, who hear these conversations happening and are going, but I wonder if there's a point, though. Well, I saw a few sentences, or I saw a few paragraphs posted up on X or whatever it is, and now I'm beginning to question. And it's like, these books have been, like, Juno Dawson is the prime target at the minute.
Sure.
This Book Is Gay has been on the shelves since, like, when was it published? 2016, I think, earlier. Like, that
quite
book
a
has
while.
Been there, not doing damage to any young people for years on the shelf. And everything is brought in, it's with education in mind, like, and with there's age categories for everyone who borrows and stuff. So it's not like you're going to have a 5-year-old coming in to borrow an adult book. Do you know what I mean? Things are structured. It's depressing. Like, I've had one experience where it was Pride a couple of years ago, and I had a guy come down and call me paedophile and threatened to break the windows of the library that I was in at the time. And when I say this to somebody, what I'm also saying to them is, 5 years ago, when I started in libraries, 6 years ago, someone wouldn't have had the guts to come in. The guts is the wrong word, but they wouldn't have had...
There wasn't a space for it, maybe, in Ireland.
There was no space for it. And they wouldn't dare have walked in and questioned. And when I say question, like, I've had people come in and go, look to order in a book that they are protesting, even though it's not on the shelf. And then just to have a conversation about how it's disgusting and it's making our kids gay. And you're like, well, first of all, making kids gay is not a problem. but they would not have done it 6 or 7 years ago. And there hasn't been enough pushback, in my opinion. And I'm not just saying necessarily from local authorities or whatever, but they've been given so much airspace as well. And libraries are there for the benefit of everyone who uses them. And nobody should be stopped. Like, no kid under the age of 18 should be stopped from getting a book that has been designated and written for them
for their
because someone has said, I don't like this book. And it's like spreading like wildfire.
spreading like wildfire. And we see, like, and this was happening in America 2-3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and everyone was like, that's never going to happen here. And I mean, they've had school libraries shut down. They've had, you know, like, lists of banned books.
Mm-hmm.
They've had threats
mm-hmm.
to librarians and teachers, like, legal threats about providing these books. And you're just going, what is happening now?
Mm.
Do you know? Particularly, like, what's the average age now that kids get onto smartphones and stuff like that? Like, the irony seems lost that
mm.
a lot of these people coming in, these concerned parents, and their
mm.
children are walking around with smartphones that literally have no filters on them, and they
mm.
can get access to absolutely anything.
And the content is far worse.
And the content is far, far worse.
Mm. Mm.
So it's really frustrating. It's
mm.
really frustrating. As a librarian.
Yeah, well, it's good we have people like you in the libraries. I think it's important.
Loads, and I mean, there
mm.
are loads of, like, last year was the first year
mm.
in the history of Pride that
mm.
a library marched in Pride.
In Dublin.
Yeah.
In Dublin. And there'll be more.
The protests in Cork. I think it was so heartening to see, again, allies stand up and stand out and say, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And whatever anybody feels about certain viewpoints, it's wrong to start policing books again as well,
yeah.
and the importance of books in education in
yeah.
general.
And you have to trust that the institutions that are providing these services and providing these books, we know what we're doing.
Mm.
Do you know? We
yeah.
know what we're doing. And if you're a young person who's listening and you're not a member of your library, do you want to be a rebel? Go join the library. Like, legit, like, do you know?
Yeah.
Because it is a great space, and you can get books, and there's no questions about from us
mm-hmm.
about where, you know, what you're getting or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're like that. It's a space there for you to use.
Yeah.
So,
and it's so heartening to see when we go into some schools for shout out workshops, really proud LGBT sections of those libraries. And it's incredible to see. And I think it's so important.
I would have given anything to
mm-hmm.
have that kind
mm-hmm.
of that colour at school,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To have the, you know, because we take visibility for granted in so many other places and walks of life, I think. LGBT people don't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're queer, you don't take
yeah.
visibility for granted, even if you're not the person who can be the most visible,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
lots of people who are listening might not be in that position. But those of us who can, I suppose, owe it to everybody else. And that's how I feel about it.
Mm.
That if you can be in the position to talk about it. I mean, I know one of the biggest fears my dad had when I came out, because I was so political at the time in general. I mean, I wanted to fix everything in the world. And I had an opinion on lots of things, but I wanted to get involved in everything and make things better. And he immediately worried that I would start going out protesting and donning the flag.
Mm.
And I did. Exactly that. And it wasn't just because I was being rebellious or because I wanted to show him or society. It was actually just because actually I was in such a lucky position that I did actually have the support of the people around me. And that didn't come at no cost. It didn't come easily, but I had it. And because I was safe and I had the privilege to be that safe, I led conversations with the fact that I was gay,
mm-hmm.
and that I was from Longford, two minority things in society. But like, that's, you know, I was in a position to do that, and lots of people don't have to and don't want to. But I've made a thing of it.
Mm.
I've worn it on my sleeve. I've shoved it in the faces. And I hate that phrase when people say, oh, sure, but you're, don't be shifting in public, you know, or whatever. Why are you holding hands? Why are you not on top of us?
Don't,
why do you have to make such a show of us?
Yeah.
I'm like,
I don't accept that.
I don't accept that. I think it's actually just important that we have that visibility. And if you're in a position to do it, talk about it.
And it's funny that nobody ever talked about straight people
rubbing
it in our faces, or books making us heterosexual when we were younger.
Oh, yeah,
clearly
no,
that didn't happen.
That's fine.
Yeah, so yeah, sometimes people have to turn these things around. Well, I could sit here talking to you all night, but I think we're going to have to start wrapping up. To finish maybe on a happy and positive note for any, particularly of young people listening, or anyone who maybe is going to share this with a young person in their lives, what are you looking forward to about married life? What are your positive hopes for the future? And any final words to anyone who's listening and would love to have their own big gay wedding?
Oh, well, you're, it costs so much money.
You know, you think it's going to cost and then like triple it.
Start saving now.
You know what? No, it is so fun. It is so amazing to be part of a community, and we are wide and we are varied and we have problems and trouble all over the place. But as a group of people that have come together and feel tribal around each other, under the colours of a rainbow flag, and as many colours as you want to add to that thing, by God, you should add them.
Keep adding.
Keep adding. Flip it. You know, it's so cool. It is so cool. And I am delighted and thrilled every single day that I wake up, not just because I wake up beside my now wife, who is gorgeous, but because I feel I love it. I love being gay. Isn't that shocking? You know, it's like,
comes full circle, I think. And that's something that maybe younger people don't realise.
Oh, it's so great.
We would never change it now, right?
No, God, no.
Because I wouldn't have found the person, like, and again, like, I talked about being in a box earlier. Like, I now actually identify more queer than I did when I was younger. And I openly talk to Sarah about all of the men that I fancy on a regular basis. And being someone who has stepped outside of my lesbian box, and I'm happy to be in a position where I just feel comfortable with who I am and what I wear and who I'm around. And we're really privileged to be in that position that we can do that, and our friends are like that too.
And that's a sign of real achieving that real feeling of comfort in yourself, I think, is when you can go beyond the box that, I think, you know, it's a comfort sometimes to be in the box, but it's also something that we feel we have to get into in order to establish ourselves. And then when you can move beyond that and say, actually, you know, sometimes I fancy people of different genders or whatever.
Yeah. Or I want to express myself differently in later life or whatever. That's all, that should all be cool. And you're courageous every single day you walk out of the house as an LGBTI person, in my opinion. As much as it's fun, it you know, it carries other expectations and risks and all of that. But I think it's really wonderful, and it's something to be treasured and to be protected. And if you are a rich queer person listening to this, please donate to Shout Out and other and other services. Give back the time, give to the things you didn't have as a kid. If you, you know, look at the likes of Belong To, look at the likes of Shout Out, look at the likes of Outhouse and all the other organisations working in the space, Tenny, all of them. You know, Trans Books Ireland, all of them, Trans Library, I think, is it? Like, all of these awesome small or big groupings that are either advocating, like LGBT Ireland is, around kind of parental rights or stuff for young kids, you know, and young people in college. Like, give back where you can. If it's time, if it's money, even better.
Do you know what you don't need money for?
The library. Join the library.
Completely free.
Yay.
Yeah.
And there's resources there.
You don't get fines now. I think if you're talking about positivity, you don't get fines.
And your one library card works everywhere in the country.
I got books from Longford recently.
Yeah, that's it. And yeah, like, pretty much everything Sheena said. But like, if you don't feel that way at the minute, and it can be hard, like, it's, you know, being gay doesn't, or being queer doesn't automatically mean that you have a community. Like, you have to go and find people. And if you're someone who doesn't find people easily, regardless of, you know, for, you know, if you're an introvert
or you're coming out older in life,
you know, you have to be willing to go and try and find people too, and be, and like as Gina said as well, like, there's so many resources out there to help you find people. And if you're open to the community, there is an amazing community out there. Like, there is. And I think definitely as two queer women from Longford, like, certainly for me growing up in the 90s, the 1890s sometimes it feels like, but I never thought that I'd be in the space I am now. I never thought I'd be married. I never thought I'd have these, like, best friends that I have.
I never thought that I'd be out and open. And like every opportunity, like every damn opportunity, like, so my wife said, I think at like at work parties, people are like, oh, for God's sake, we know, we get it, you're married. But it's cool, you know?
But it's important as well. Yeah. I think beyond when straight people might say that, I think it's important. I caught myself saying partner a lot,
yeah,
and forced myself to say girlfriend, yeah, more often. And
gender
it. Forget about fiance, because that,
yeah,
that complicates it further.
Yeah.
But gender it, because again, what you talked about, Sheena, the visibility is really important.
And one thing I think we all need to do, particularly if you're someone who's listening to this and you've come the full circle, or you're out, or you're married, or you're just later in life and you're kind of comfortable with who you are. I don't know actually if that sentence applies. Most people are never fully comfortable with who they are. But I think you need to challenge yourself to continue learning. I think it's really easy as you become an elder gay or whatever, that you stand still a little bit and you recognize the work that was maybe done on marriage equality or various different campaigns. And I've been involved in a lot of them in advocacy. And then to just say, okay, that's it now. And I don't need to keep learning, and I don't need to keep challenging myself. And instead, I'm going to stand here and be like, God, all these young ones with all the new terms and all the new names and all the... Absolutely not. Do not be that person. Challenge yourself. Keep listening to podcasts like Shout Out, and keep reading the articles and listening to younger people, because they will challenge the things you thought were status quo. Even if you think you were a rebel, they're going to throw away all of the rules after us, and they're dead right. And I think don't be opposed to that kind of change. I think that's if you find yourself being challenged by a young queer person, then they're probably right. they've definitely got something to say, and you should listen to them. That's what I would say. And I think it's really easy when you get like to a certain point in your life, as we are, very privileged, very lucky to be in the position we are and to have come through what we have come through, but to stop then. And I don't think we should. We should always just keep challenging ourselves and learning from the young ones.
That's one thing we have in common, Sheena. Keep that activism going. Well, Sheena, Sarah Lane, thank you so much for sitting down and chatting to us on Shout Out Listen In, and for sharing lots of really personal stuff. I think it can be really helpful to particularly young people, or maybe older queer people who don't see marriage in their lives but would like to. So thank you so much for sharing, and congratulations again.
We will continue to judge you for putting two sugars in your coffee.
You've just listened to Sheena Cahill and Sarah Lane McHugh talking to us about their life as a gay married couple, their recent wedding, the 2015 marriage referendum, and much, much more. Thanks so much to both of them for joining us for today's episode. And thanks to all of you. Don't forget, wherever you get your podcast, to give us a follow and a rating if you have a moment. It really helps with us sharing the podcast far and wide. And be sure to share it with somebody who you think might benefit from it. Send us your ideas as well for any episodes you'd like to see of Shout Out Listen In this year. You can drop us an email to team@shoutout.ie, or you'll find us across social media at shoutout_IORE. Until next time, don't forget to shout out, listen in.